Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week, we're highlighting programs from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
Our show is Planet Philadelphia from WGGT-LP in Northwest Philadelphia. Our hosts are Kay Wood and Linda Rosenwein, and their guest is Eric Goldwyn, who is a researcher at New York University.
Hi, everyone. This is Kay Wood, the host of Planet Philadelphia. Linda Rosenwein is here with me also. We're on a Zoom call with Eric Goldwyn. He's a professor and researcher at NYU. And if you would, could you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. I'm a professor and researcher at NYU, and I work at a research institute called the Marin Institute of Urban Management. And, the work that we try to do is applied urban research. So dealing with sort of contemporary issues, and not to denigrate any other academics out there, you know, not to sort of do research that just lives on a shelf and is not sort of applied. So we're always trying to deal with things as they come up in the real world, so to speak.
The reason we got in touch with you is we did see an article that you did with Alan Levy about buses and public transportation. And one of the headlines I saw, or subheads, said that ways to save public transportation. And that's what we're really interested in.
So yeah, I mean, I've been looking at this issue since the beginning of COVID. I think that article is from April or so. And obviously a lot has changed since then. You know, transit hasn't had the easiest go of it prior to COVID, and COVID has been especially brutal here in New York where I live. I think at the peak, you know, transit ridership had declined about 90% on the subway. Buses were a bit more resilient, I think maybe 50, 60% drops, but that probably had more to do with justice than to do with sort of public health concerns. So I think, yeah, the big issue is there's always been an operating cost funding issue for transit in American cities. And when you sort of take away all the riders, that just sort of compounds the problem. A couple cities had been moving towards sort of fare-free transit, Kansas City in particular. Boston has been talking about some of this as well. And if you eliminated the fare, for instance, then I guess the impact of Corona in terms of, you know, what effect it has on revenue is much less relevant. But, you know, that's not an option a lot of places are talking about. And I think, you know, with the budget crunches that we're seeing around American cities and states, perhaps those debates are going to be shelved for the time being. A number of cities and states have already put a pause on capital expansion to transit systems. They've cut routes for their buses, and if they have subways, they've started to cut back on that stuff too. So the issues are obviously pretty dramatic. You know, I think the MTA here in New York has said this is the biggest crisis it's ever faced, greater than anything before. And a lot of the problems that we're seeing with the funding for transit go back to 2008 and the financial crisis then, where we saw a lot of cuts to transit service in order to, you know, balance budgets and keep things running. But those cuts, even as the economy sort of expanded, were not restored. You know, Seattle is the big outlier there. They're a city that continued to fund their bus operations and have seen growth in bus ridership, you know, since 2008. Across the country, we've seen declines in ridership pre-Corona even. In New York, the decline was about 22% in ridership between 2008 and 2017, 2018, let's call it. And those declines have continued since. I think transit is dramatically important for people that don't drive. I don't drive, for instance, and don't plan on driving. And I think that we've seen that transit can be safe. I think that's obviously the biggest sort of existential threat to transit is, if I get on a bus, if I get on a subway, am I going to contract Corona? And I think the evidence so far has been that as long as you're wearing a mask, as long as you're not talking, you probably will be okay. As long as you're not like, you know, if you're not on it for 12 hours a day or something. Air ventilation on subways apparently is quite good. The fact that people don't talk on public transport apparently is also quite good. And then I think the other part of it is just, you know, what happens with the economy. That's usually what dictates transit ridership, right? If the economy is doing well, people are on buses and subways trying to get to work, trying to, you know, spend some money on, you know, shopping or seeing friends and families and eating out. And I think we've seen this throughout the past, whatever, 10 months or so, is that our economic circumstances drive a lot of our decision making. And if people have jobs to go to and, I guess, things to buy and money to buy them with, they will use transit if it's affordable and convenient. And I think that's the real struggle in America, is really our transit is just not very reliable and convenient. You know, New York is a huge outlier in that respect. And even we could do a lot better.
Why don't we start with immediate things that need to be done?
So, you know, San Francisco, pretty early on in all of this, had, I think, the right idea in that, you know, if schools are closed and if offices are closed, you know, you really shouldn't be running regular bus service to, you know, business district because there's no need for it. What you really want to focus on is serving those essential worker trips, right? So getting people to warehouses, getting people to health services, getting people to supermarkets, those types of things. And I think that what we have with smartphone data and, you know, a little bit of intelligence, we can sort of redesign routes relatively quickly. That's the sort of the brilliance of the bus versus fixed rail system, is that you can just say, hey, drive down the street instead. I think what would make more sense, right, is to sort of cut that route for the time being and then beef up service on busier routes so that you can have at least patina of social distancing, right? The busiest bus routes and busiest train lines are still pretty crowded, it seems. So it would be good to just sort of focus the service on those routes. And maybe the other part of it is you can truncate certain routes. So I think in the short term, realigning our routes to better match the demand and the needs of essential workers and how people are traveling is a really good first step that is not as hard as it might at first appear.
That sounds like you want the system to be more flexible to react to the needs of the riders.
I think for the time being, because it's such a dramatic shock to the system, that's the bigger issue, is your system needs to connect origins and destinations that are of utility to riders. And if riders are not going to the busiest business districts where they normally are going, then, you know, what is the point of running that service? You're just wasting money fundamentally. And you're, you know, spewing out emissions and congestion, all those types of things.
Then there's the health safety issue on transportation. Is that being handled okay?
My sense of it is that there's been a lot of emphasis on sanitizing and deep cleaning. And those things, at least from what I've been reading, and I am no public health expert, are not really the ways in which corona is transmitted. It's not really from touching stuff. It's more about, you know, the airborne, you know, people coughing on in your face, or, you know, things like that, which do happen in transit. And so I think agencies need to maybe move away from spending money on those things and more on just running regular service. Maybe you open up the windows on the bus because the bus doesn't have the same air circulation as a subway does. Subway, I think I read, it exchanges the air every like 10 to 15 seconds, which is like much better than an office building, much better than, you know, in our houses and our apartments. Apparently in some respects, the subway and trains are better equipped for dealing with these types of things. But I do think that the future of transit, it's not great at the moment, but I don't think there's necessarily anything that is going to disqualify it going further because of corona, other than, like, you know, if jobs just don't reemerge.
If we could go further into the future, what needs to happen with public transit? Because you said even before the coronavirus hit that ridership was decreasing in most areas.
The reason why I love studying transportation is that it is so simple. And, you know, I'm going to say a few things and you'll be like, oh, that's really smart. But it's like, it's not that smart. Like, we've known these things forever and they've been effective in other cities and other countries. And I'm just stealing ideas that other people are using effectively. So the basic thing is this, right? the reason why people don't take public transport is because it is slow, unpredictable. If they own a car, it's much less reliable. And the upfront costs of sort of each ride versus sort of you pay your gas or whatever, it just doesn't sort of pencil out in a way. So the things that you focus on, right, are, okay, how do we make our transit run more quickly and more reliably, right? So the way that you do that, right, is you have to get rid of the things that cause traffic for transit, right? So that's like a bus lane, a protected bus lane that doesn't allow cars in it. That's like a big first step. And we've seen a couple cities play around with these ideas in the last like 2 to 3 years. So here in New York, on 14th Street, we built a busway where we banned traffic other than buses and some deliveries. And we've seen ridership increase on 14th Street, and we've seen the speed of the bus also improve. So that's like a big first step to getting this right. Other things that you look at, you know, a lot of cities are thinking about something called congestion pricing, where you charge autos to enter a business district. I think that that has a lot to do with just the levels of congestion that you have in your city, whether or not that's a good idea. But in general, people are very in favor of getting drivers to sort of recognize the costs that they put out on the environment, right? So like if a car double parks in a lane, it fundamentally shuts down that lane of traffic, which has a huge delay effect on all the cars behind it, but then people in buses. Like that's why the bus is so unreliable here in New York. It's like double parked cars. It's a very sort of aggravating thing to see. And then, you know, there's the Uber and Lyft issue where you see a rise of these other modes of transport that are also taking up space on the road. And so if you have all these things competing for scarce, limited space, obviously the bus is going to be a loser in that battle. So we as citizens and as elected officials and academics, whatever, we need to, you know, fight for our buses and say, hey, let's give the bus a little bit of an advantage. Let's make it more reliable. Let's make it run more quickly, and more people will ride it. And you'll actually see your fare box recovery increase.
What I like about these suggestions, because I thought it was going to be a big funding or a big infrastructure thing,
sure,
was these sound actually feasible. I don't know if they're politically feasible or not, but.
I mean, on the infrastructure side, look, I'm from New York. I love subways. I would build subways everywhere. The demand requires. So the thing is, it's a capacity issue, right? Like if you need to move 50,000 people down one street or one corridor in an hour, do a subway. Don't mess around with buses. But that's not the circumstance of most places, right? Like 50,000 people in an hour, it's a lot of people. So if you're moving some much smaller number, buses are definitely the way to go. And Linda, to your point, it is all entirely political. Like that's the thing that is so heartbreaking about all this, is that here in New York, whenever they try to put in a bus lane, what it requires is that you take some parking oftentimes, right? Because our streets are fixed and people don't like giving up their parking. And local elected officials, because their viewpoint is so parochial and so narrow to their neighborhood, they're going to fight for those people who are saying, hey, don't take away our parking. And then oftentimes small business owners think that if you take away the parking outside of their store, people aren't going to shop at their store. There have been lots of studies on this that show that, you know, a lot of people, at least in New York, they take the bus, they take the subway to get to these shops. Like if I'm going to get furniture, yes, I'm probably not going to take a bus or a transit. I might need a car, but we can figure that out. There are loading zones. There are all kinds of, you know, things we can do to allocate space at the curb. But if I'm doing a little grocery shopping, like I don't need my own car to do that. So I think, you know, a lot of it is a political fight that is based on not great information and, you know, maybe the traveling behavior of business owners and a few people that own cars. The other part, right, is that like transit is not a natural, it's not a natural constituency. Like people aren't like, I'm a proud bus rider. So when the aspiration is to not be a transit rider, you don't have people fighting for it and sort of showing up and supporting it in the same way that you have people sort of vociferously barking about, you know, I need more parking or, you know, whatever it is. And the equity component is often just erased because even people who are poor or less well off are like, you know, I'm hoping to be a car driver someday soon.
I guess we need to do something to uplift the image of public transit.
I think a big part of it is just you get elected officials to ride on these things.
Is there anything you'd like to leave the listener with?
The story of New York since 1980, its real renaissance, it tracks with just huge gains in transit ridership. and in Seattle, which is sort of booming right now, but they've been heavily investing in more rail, more bus, more service, just allowing people to move around as freely and easily as possible. The more that you can do that, the more you can just take advantage of all of the great things your city has to offer, right? From jobs and education to just amenities and cultural activities and sort of just seeing different stuff. You know, that's the thing that is amazing about buses and subways. You know, I grew up in New York, and from a young age, I was able to go to baseball games in Queens. That is very far from where I lived. I mean, being a non-car driver, whenever I travel outside, it's so infantilizing. Like, you know, I can't do anything on my own, or if I go walking, people look at me like I'm a crazy person. That's the real thing about transit, is that it is so empowering and allows everyone to sort of fully activate all of the rights that we have guaranteed to us in a lot of ways.
Well, it's really been delightful talking with you, and thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Good luck with the show. I look forward to hearing what you come up with.
Our second show is Vanessa's Money Hour, which plays on WRLG LP in Germantown. Our host is Vanessa Lowe, and her guests are Monique Pine, George Drakopoulos, and Dr. Kennard L. Herring. All three are business owners in Germantown.
Welcome to Vanessa's Money Hour. Have everyone introduce themselves. Let me start with Monique Pines, please. You have an art business. We are in a pandemic and people aren't supposed to be touching things that other people are touching. So tell us a little bit about your business model, as though I'm a customer calling in and saying, well, it's a pandemic, but you know, can I get together with my friends and do art? How would you help us do that?
My business model has, of course, shifted with the pandemic, and because I do rely on social contact with my guests, I had to pivot and do virtual events as well as starting a retail store where we offer grab-and-go paint kits, everything from canvas to wood, ceramics, and in between. So we are virtual and now have a retail store. And by virtual, I mean I'm providing live paint parties as well as paint sessions for people who still want to get outrageous and stay safe in their homes.
That's interesting. So you would deliver the material to them, like the paint kits and such, and then everybody's Zooming together with their kits. Is that how it works?
Correct. I ship now as too. So I ship it, I either deliver it in our mobile vehicle, or they can arrange for curbside pickup right at our studio location.
That's great. Thank you, Monique. How wonderful that people can continue to be artful even under the pandemic. Let's move on to the next business model. So George is going to tell us how he's been handling business at Malalani Cafe during the pandemic. George, how's that been going?
Yeah, it's definitely been a learning curve. I was very lucky to be in Power Up Your Business. So I have all the resources right at my hands when March came around. So with my business consultant that I got through Power Up, I was able to, she coached me through just trying to, you know, make it through. We did online ordering, you know, really focused on the website so people, because the phone was ringing off the hook, you know, just working on curbside, making sure that we were adhering to all the rules of, you know, for being COVID safe. So it's been definitely a learning curve, but being in Power Up right before this hit was just like, it really helped me to make it through this.
So you were in the most recent cohort of Power Up Your Business. That's great. Thanks for sharing that. All right, continuing on talking to our three different business owners on Germantown Avenue, let's get to Dr. Kennard Herring and hear about how he's handling selling glasses and doing eye exams in the pandemic. Let's hear from you.
Yeah, so the way we've been managing the pandemic is we definitely had to slow down decrease the amount of patients that we were seeing in the office. So you can almost say everybody received more like a concierge type of service know, they'll schedule a patient per hour. And, you know, still giving an eye exam is still quite intimate. So everybody will be wear masks and follow the safety precautions to try to prevent any type of contact. Yeah, that's pretty much how we manage, and we sanitize everything, wipe everything down after each patient. And it's been going pretty well.
Thanks, all three of you. It's so great to hear that your businesses are thriving, even in the pandemic. So congratulations on that. You're listening to Germantown Community Radio. Some of you may have just joined us. This is WRLGLP at 92.9 FM in Northwest Philadelphia. Today, I'm having a wonderful conversation, a very local conversation, with business owners from Germantown Avenue up here in Northwest Philadelphia, and also with the two women who support small business development here in the Philadelphia region. So we're having a great conversation. We've covered several ideas and issues around surviving as a business owner in the pandemic. Next, we want to move into a different question. So let's talk about what's been the key to your success. You know, there may be some of the ideas we talked about today. It may be the business that you're in. Was it the support systems that you've had? You know, we've got folks listening in who are thinking about starting a small business, or maybe are in small business. And so, you know, we want to get as many points as we can from those of you who have, you know, you're running successful businesses, and that is a challenge in the pandemic, but it's also a challenge in general. So, and the other thing is, during the pandemic, a big question is, were you ever shut down completely? I think particularly in the beginning, there were some businesses that either weren't allowed to open, or folks just didn't feel comfortable. So answer those two questions for us. Were you ever shut down completely? And second thing is, what do you think is the overall biggest factor of success for your business? Monique, let's start with you for that question.
So, oh man, so I did shut down, you know, as far as the locations to come in for in-person parties, but I'm going to have to brag about this guy that's on the line. Dr. Herring is awesome. Because we're friends, but we're also business owners. And he had talked to me a while ago about finding my tribe, meaning find other people that do what I do. So I'm a part of a huge Facebook group of over 6,000 of us that do this pink thing we got going on. And I went right to the group, and people was like, sell pink kits. I jumped right on it immediately. Didn't even really know exactly what I was going to do. You know, I started off with saran wrap. I didn't even have my bags because, of course, with COVID, Amazon was running out of items. But because of that group and that network, it was like I never stopped because of that. And Dr. Herring was one who said, find your tribe. And this group is amazing. You know, I even used them for marketing. Because they're a very supportive group. So, and also people like Dr. Herring, when we were open back up, I had an event at his eyeglass shop. So just being able to network, having friends, having family, and just people supporting, reaching out to me, asking me, was I okay? And that just felt good. So just having my tribe and a great network, whereas though my in-person shut down, but I never stopped doing art with people, selling kits, painting virtually, even painting on Facebook Live for free and gaining customers from that. So that was just crucial. I felt like I never stopped. I've been more busier than ever, to be exact, because I also take commission artwork now, and I started sharing my personal art, which I never did. I kept all my personal art to myself, so I would say at least every week I have a commissioned art piece. I have a mural I'm getting ready to work on. So just that networking and finding your tribe is everything. So thank you, Kennard.
There you go. Love it when we collaborate. And that is a very important thing, finding your tribe. So how wonderful that you got that connection. George, let's hear from you about were you ever shut down completely at Malalani? And what's been the key to your success, would you say?
So initially, I didn't close down. I have some just like weekend warrior customers. I mean, employees, just some young employees. So I let all my employees go, and I just kind of worked the store by myself initially in the first couple months to be safe, you know. And then I got busier and busier, so I brought like one employee back, and then I brought another back. So just after, you know, and then by June, I brought everybody back. And I still decided, with my business coach, I decided not to do indoor seating when we did indoor seating. So I just continued to do curbside and takeout and online ordering, even when we were, you know, able to do indoor seating, so that just to get through this. It's not one of the biggest things that helps me is that I'm small. So it doesn't make sense for me to open the doors for people if I can only fit like 8 or 10 people there. So it's being small and having good, healthy, fast food really helped me to get through the pandemic for sure, you know. And I do have to say that both Dr. Herring and Monique are both amazing business owners on Germantown Avenue. And also I was doing a lot of live entertainment before, and I thought my business really you know, needed the live entertainment. But what was cool to go through the pandemic and see how much the food was such a big part of everything was kind of cool. And then, you know, just doing online ordering helped with the phone ringing all the time, because initially to make it contact-free, we were taking credit cards over the phone, and it just takes forever to do a transaction, you know. So being innovative, you know, you want to be able to take as many orders as possible quickly, you know. So definitely learned a lot of new things that I needed to do for my business that helped, because I'm going through a crisis.
Thanks for that, George. I hope some of the other restaurant business owners are listening, particularly those who haven't gone to that online ordering system yet, because I can imagine, again, how long that takes to try to do that essentially manually. All right, let's go to Dr. Herring and hear about his experience with any shutdowns and what's been the key to his success. Dr. Herring.
Yes, first and foremost, thank you guys for all your kind words. You both know how much you mean to me. I think I'm probably one of the last people to open a business on the avenue, and you guys have definitely accepted me with open arms and to help me grow. So I appreciate you just as much as you appreciate me. And I'm glad that I could be helpful to both of you. So during my time during the pandemic, I'm considered an essential business. So I did not close. April was an extremely slow month. But I noticed in May we started to pick up. A lot of people needed emergent care, and a lot of other offices were closed around the city. So we actually started to pick up business. And ever since May, we've been pretty much rocking and rolling. I mean, it seems like we never lost a step after April. And it allowed us to continue to grow. And people felt comfortable with the experience and providing a safe space to them. And, you know, one thing I learned about Philadelphia is that a word of mouth is everything. So I think that also allowed us to continue to grow. One, we're being open. One is safe. And people are looking for care during a pandemic. And a lot of people have a lot of time on their hands, too. So I guess they wanted to, you know, do a little self-care and get their eyes examined. So it's been pretty good during the pandemic for us.
Thank you. Thank you all. Really, really inspiring. And I love all the collaborative thank yous and support that you all seem to be to each other. So that's just wonderful. And that is very, very, very Northwest, very Mount Airy, very Germantown. So good for you all.
Thank you for listening to Indie Radio Garden. I'm Connie Billet from WRLG LP. In Germantown. We appreciate your coming to listen to the authentic voices of community radio in Philadelphia.
One final message before Indie Radio Garden signs off, and that is, please behave.